Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 333 for September 11th, 2011. This time around, I'm on location at Brooklady Distillery on Isla, which is celebrating the 10th anniversary of its revival this weekend with the debut of the Laddie 10, the first 10-year-old malt produced completely with whiskey distilled since Brooklady reopened.
Brooklady was always a slave distillery. It was Cinderella. Brooklady never went to the ball. Now Brooklady is at the ball.
Later on, we'll hear from the two men who get most of the credit for Brooklady's revival, head distiller Jim McEwen and managing director Mark Rainier. And Mark will tell us the story of his first visit to the distillery, which led to the quest that led to this weekend. First off, let's look at the rest of the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. 10 years is something to celebrate, but 1,000 years? That's a long time. Clontarf Irish Whiskey was named in honor of the Battle of Clontarf in the year 1014, when an Irish army led by the great King Brian Boru defeated the Vikings near Dublin. 2014 marks the millennium of that battle. Castle Brands is now calling its whiskey Clontarf 1014 to honor that anniversary, along with a new slogan, Celebrate the Warrior Within. There's been another shakeup at Stranahan's Colorado Whiskey in Denver. Head distiller Jake Norris has moved on, following co-founder Jess Graber out the door. The distillery was sold last year to New Jersey-based Proximo Spirits. And while Jess remains a consultant and brand ambassador, Jake is leaving to pursue other options. Stranahan's general manager Pete Macca has named Jake's apprentice Rob Dietrich to serve as head distiller. The Glenrothes has two new expressions on the way. The Glenrothes 1995 vintage uses a combination of American and Spanish oak first fill sherry casks and refill casks. It'll be available in selected markets in time for the holidays, along with the new 1988 vintage. I'll have more details and tasting notes when they're available. Auchentoshan has two new expressions on the way. Valinch is a cask-strength version of the Auchentoshan Classic, and there's a new 1999 vintage matured in Bordeaux wine casks as well. I'll have more on these in an upcoming episode. If you see a bottle of Amrut's peated single malts, either in regular or cask strength, grab it. Got word from Amrut this week that there won't be any new shipments of the peated expressions until at least next March. The distillery cites consumer demand for Amrut Fusion and plans to focus on getting as much of it out to market as possible. There will be new releases of Amrut Kadambam and Two Continents between now and the holidays, along with a new Amrut Porta Nova. Don't have any details on that one yet other than the name, but I strongly suspect from the name that there are some port casks involved. Finally, this is Kentucky Bourbon Festival week. Heaven Hill is offering a limited edition bottling of Elijah Craig 20-year-old just for the festival. It's being sold as part of a package that includes a half-day-long tour of the Heaven Hill warehouses and Bardstown's Distillers Row, along with lunch and a tasting session. The price for the entire package is $275. That's the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Time is running out to enter for a chance to win a trip to Scotland, where you'll visit the Glenmorangie Distillery, meet some of the 16 men of Tain, and stay at the Glenmorangie House. You'll find details at the Glenmorangie USA Facebook page. Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well-made. A couple of quick program notes now. In 2 weeks, I'll be on the road at Whiskey Live Paris, and we'll be doing something special. We're taping a live episode of Whiskey Cast Virtual Tastings at Whiskey Live Paris with a tasting panel selected at the event. If you're going to be there, you might just be picked for one of the spots on the panel. Thanks to La Maison du Whiskey for making this special episode of Whiskey Cast Virtual Tastings possible. Of course, I'll have complete coverage of Whiskey Live Paris that weekend here on Whiskey Cast. Last time around, I mentioned that the annual Laphroaig Live webcast will be on October 6th from Sydney, Australia. There's always a small live audience on hand, and Laphroaig has given me 2 tickets to give away to a Whiskey Cast community member. You'll find more details on our Facebook page, but please only enter if you can actually be in Sydney, Australia on the 6th. Let's check the comments of the week now, brought to you this time around by Highland Park. Got a great email from Erica Brooks at Charity Water. You may recall the Water of Life campaign last year, where we raised more than $5,000 to build a water well for a village in Ethiopia. Well, that project is still underway, but this past week was Charity Water's 5th anniversary. Erica and her team produced a series of videos to thank their donors, and that includes the entire WhiskeyCast community. Their video thanks for you is available on YouTube now, and I'm posting a link to it on the WhiskeyCast website and our Facebook page. Thanks again to everyone who helped support the campaign. Now, if you have a question, suggestion, or a comment, share it with us on the Facebook page, or just email me if you're not on Facebook. My email address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and the comments of the week are brought to you by Highland Park.
Hello, this is Jerry Tosh of Highland Park, the makers of the best spirit in the world. If you'd like to go onto the WhiskeyCast website and click on the banner, then it'll take you to the inner circle and sign up, and we'll send you as much information about Highland Park as you ever need to know.
Time now for the calendar of events brought to you as always by Lafroig. The Lagavulin Isla Jazz Festival is this coming weekend of the 16th through the 18th right here on Isla. Bourbon's Bistro in Louisville will host Julian and Preston Van Winkle for a Pappy Van Winkle Distillers dinner on the 19th. Milroy's of Soho in London will host a whiskey tasting on the 20th. The Whiskey by the Sea Festival is the 24th in Vlissingen, Netherlands. Once again, I'll be in Paris the weekend of the 24th through the 26th for Whiskey Live Paris. And the Autumn Speyside Whiskey Festival is September 29th through October 3rd in Dufton, Scotland. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Lafroig. Even if you don't win our ticket giveaway for the Lafroig Live webcast in Sydney October 6th, you can still be part of the action. Visit the all-new Lafroig website for details at lafroig.com. And while you're there, become a friend of Lafroig and claim your own square foot of Isla. Now for WhiskeyCast In Depth. Once again, I'm on Isla as Brook Laddie Distillery celebrates the 10th anniversary of its revival this weekend. Today was the first bottling run for the new Laddie 10, the first 10-year-old produced completely with spirit distilled since the reopening and went on sale immediately at the distillery shop. The crowd behind me are the dozens of Illiocs and visitors who lined up to buy a bottle of it. They do things a bit differently here at Brook Laddie, including sourcing as much barley as they can from local farmers, because Jim McEwen wants it that way.
My best day of the year is working with the Isla farmers on the day we negotiate the contracts. It's the best bloody day in the world. Isla farmers, is there any Isla farmers here? No, I can't see. They're all here, the whole lot of them are here. This is how it goes on farmers' negotiation day. The Isla farmers are quiet guys. And we meet them up at the academy, and they all come in. And one will say to the other, "Hello, Ian, how are you today?" "Aye, fine, fine, fine." "What about you, Donald?" "Aye, fine." "How's the wife?" "Oh, aye, she's fine too." "What about you, Peter? How's the sheep?" "Ah, oh, not so good." Nobody's given any secrets away, because they're all absolutely minted, you understand? And they're all checking each other out. Has he got a better BMW than mine? He's got private plates. So they're all very kind of subdued. And then we sit down and negotiate. And the trick is you give them plenty of whiskey at the negotiations. They start off wanting ridiculous prices, like £300 a ton, you know, and stuff like that. So after a few drams, we got a bit of lunch from the girls in the academy. And the drams start to kick in. And these 12 guys, who would hardly speak to each other, they're all fired up now. You can see the passion in their eyes. By Christ, John, we'll show these boys in Speyside, eh? Oh, they're bloody up there. Well, we hire a bus. We'll bloody hire a bus and let this, we'll show these bloody farmers up in Speyside how to do it. Come on, let's go now, you know. So, it's absolutely brilliant. It's a Tom and Jerry show.
Ian Torrance is one of the Isla farmers that Jim gets fired up every year.
There was no barley grown commercially. It was grown purely for cattle feed. There were numerous people grew it, but only for cattle feed. No one has ever grown it for barley for distilling before. No.
What's the difference in growing barley for cattle feed versus distilling?
Malting barley is different. Fertilizer qualities, amounts. The nitrogen contents have to be slightly different. Basically, that's it.
What did you think when they came to you guys and started asking you to grow barley for the distillery here?
Nuts. Brook Laddie, they're crazy. They do these things. But, yeah, nice idea. Good if it works. We weren't sure if it would.
But it's worked.
So, yeah, as far as we can see, it's worked. Yes, yes. I would say it's a good idea, yeah.
What's it meant to the stability on the island and to the economy of the island to have you guys growing barley that can be used for products that can be exported?
We're only hoping that this will, it'll be a niche market for locally grown barley, locally whiskey. We would hope that the local whiskies will be a niche market and they'll sell well. There's not enough of it to make it hugely financially.
Has there been any interest from any of the other distilleries yet since then?
No. Other distilleries are mainly corporate-driven. They buy their barley in bulk and send it here. That's the way they work. That's the way they work. Yeah.
Now, you guys have a cask here, too, don't you?
Yes, we do. And we hope to have more.
Tell me about the cask you guys have aging in the warehouse. I know we got to try a little of it yesterday, and the sherry cask is really, really good. But tell me how you guys came about that cask.
There was eight of us joined in the cask we're in. There was eight of us, and we just thought it would be a good idea. Brooklandy is the only company who sell casks. And we just thought, it's a fun thing to do. We'll buy a cask and then we'll keep it and drink it when it gets ready, you know. And we do a wee tasting of it every year, and by the time it's ready, there'll be none left.
This weekend has been 10 long years in the making. It's been an emotional weekend for many of the people who have given the last 10 years of their lives to reviving Brooklady. None more so than Jim McEwen, who gave up a 38-year-long career at Bowmore to take on the challenge. Has it turned out to be everything you thought it would be 10 years ago?
It certainly has. I must say, when we were presenting the whiskey, I was a bit anxious because a lot of very famous like Malt Vinex, Martino, all these people, Whiskey Magazine, as my critics, plus, more importantly, the people of the island. How would they judge this whiskey? And I'm very, very pleased to say that the response has been very positive. So I'm absolutely, it's been more than positive. It's been really touched me that they're finding it's like the old Brooklady 15 used to be, you know, it's got that richness and the freshness of Isla. Yeah, so I'm really pleased with the outcome. Not pleased, it's not even good enough. It's been a very emotional day because I remember making the first whiskey 10 years ago. Shit, that was emotional. This is just as emotional. Every bit is emotional. So I'm humbled and pleased and delighted, it's not enough. It's just a special day in the history of a distillery, you know what I mean? It's not too many days like this when a distillery comes back from the dead. So today is like the resurrection. It's a resurrection day, you know. Wonderful.
Tell me about that day a little over 10 years ago when you first showed up over here after leaving Bowmore, and you met the boys in the canteen for tea, and you were telling us earlier that you thought you'd made a horrible mistake until you talked to the guys who worked here.
Yeah, that's correct. When I came through the gates, the place was run down. I hadn't seen paint for years. It was a real mess. Broken windows. It was like a bomb site. It was just like a bomb site. And then I met the two guys who were the custodians of the casks, which had been left here. And just sitting in the canteen, drinking out a chipped coffee cup, you know. It was just the passion in their eyes and their voice and the things. They were so anxious to get started immediately that day, you know. We can start now. And as I say, after 10 minutes, I thought, wow, there's something good here. The karma is amazing in this place, you know. It's like a little ember that's been glowing for 10 years. It just needs a draft of wind to turn it into a flame, you know. And hopefully that's what we've done.
Have you lived up to your expectations 10 years ago?
It has, and beyond, yeah. It has and beyond, yeah.
Will this be your enduring legacy here or the 38 years at Bowmore before?
I couldn't say the legacy would be either one or the other. It's just a journey through life. And I never created my path. Somebody much greater than me created the path for me. And I was just walking a path that was already illuminated for me, you know. a lot of people have played a lot of big part of my life, you know, a huge part of my life. And I've been very, very lucky, very fortunate to have met such great people. So Beaumont, my apprenticeship, my early training, my blending experience, my world travel, just getting around, meeting people, that was invaluable. You know, so it was like a university for me. And then taking these skills to Brooklady, to a beaten-up, run-down old company, coming from where I came from, was a fantastic challenge. Never thinking we'd ever do it, but being confident because of all the experience that Beaumont gave me, for which I would be eternally grateful. I mean, it's Beaumont that trained me, it wasn't Brooklady. So Brooklady's probably getting the better of Beaumont's training, and me personally. So a great debt of gratitude is owed to Beaumont, and some fantastic trainers I had at Beaumont. So yeah, it's just a combination, and Brooklady is the icing on the cake, you know. There's been so many highlights, and there have been dips as well, you know. It's been quite an emotional journey. In fact, I'm a very emotional guy, as you know. But today is really, it's stellar. It's right up there, you know. It's like selecting the first black Beaumont. That was a stellar day, and doing stuff like that, you know. And today is just in that class. It's like winning the World Cup. And I won't enjoy it today. And I won't enjoy it tonight. It's when after everybody's gone, and the feedback comes in from around the world, and people say, yeah, Jim, we like your work. That's when it'll happen for me, you know. Today, is just so much going on, as you know, there's a lot of people here. But in the weeks ahead, it will happen, and then that's when I'll really appreciate the comments. If it comes back positive, it's still, the world at large has got to try the Brooklady 10, but if the response from today's tasting is anything to go by, I'm just so, so pleased.
One technical question. Douglas said today that basically you're simplifying the line from this point on, where the peateds will all be either Octomore or Port Charlotte, and Brooklady from now on will be unpeated.
Completely, yeah.
Explain how this is going to work for the folks who are used to a number of different expressions and a number of different things coming from Brooklady. This really simplifies it, makes it easier for everyone, right?
Yeah. Well, we couldn't do before because we didn't have a 10-year-old, right? So we're relying heavily upon the younger whiskies, and we needed money, you know? So we had to extend the line, and Port Charlotte was something I always wanted to make a heavy peated malt down here. And Port Charlotte, I'm very proud of Port Charlotte. It's going to be a brilliant, brilliant young islander. I remember at PC5, I was like walking today with my grandchild. I was reaching down. And now, with PC8 in particular, I've got my arm around the kid's shoulder. He's almost as tall as I am. So I watched Port Charlotte growing up. And it's great, you know. Next year, he'll be looking me straight in the eye. And I like what I see in the child, you know. Octomore, I'm still bending down a little bit to pick him up. So each one's a little part of the family. But the simplification of the line had to be done, you know. We had to diversify and create all sorts of things just to keep paying the wages. It's been really difficult for 10 years. You know, we don't have a big checkbook or a major sponsor. You know, we could have sold our whiskey to the blenders easily and taken the cheap money, but we didn't. We hung on, we went to the bank and we bought it at high rates. We had to do it. Our shareholders have been outstanding. They have never asked for a bonus in 10 years. Quite incredible. Just put it back in. The karma has been very, very good. It's been great karma here. You know, I just feel that, you know, suddenly 50 people in Isla are shareholders in a distillery. And it happens to be the smallest distillery, you know. I mean, God couldn't write this script, you know what I mean? You couldn't write a script, you know. 50 shareholders, each one. Farmers, the whole lot, you know, it's like, it's a fairy story. It's a good story. We need a good story. As I said to you earlier, Brooklady was always a slave distillery. It was Cinderella. Brooklady never went to the ball. Now Brooklady is at the ball. No longer a blender's malt. Brooklady reminds me a little bit of Lady Diana. It's got that beauty, you know. It's got that finesse, that attractiveness. And that's how I see it. It's a beautiful, beautiful. Port Charlotte, a handsome young islander, big heart, you know, clear mind. And Octomore, the quiet guy, you know, the quiet one of the family. big and brooding and strong. And so it's a nice family is building up. You've got the sister Brathlady and the two brothers. And it's nice. That's how I see it, as a kind of family thing.
Jim is the public face of the distillery, but the real credit for bringing Brathlady back to life goes to managing director Mark Rainier. For him, it's been a 20-year-plus journey. 10 years in now, I know we talked earlier and you said you didn't really want to mark a milestone artificially, but now that you've gone through this, now that everyone's here, now that the first 10-year-old has been unveiled, how do you feel?
It's just a huge relief, I don't know if you asked the same question to Jim, but it's like you always can't believe that, you know, the moment's happened, it's occurred. It's I told you earlier, it's not so much 10-year whiskey. I mean, that's a commercial thing, that's a commercial relevance to the company. It's more the fact that we've been doing this for 10 years and all that work and heartache and anguish, the tears, the blood, the sweat. I mean, that's, you know, all encapsulated in that whiskey. I mean, people won't realise that. We realise that. That's why it's important to us, because it's got a lot of us in it. And, of course, it's only the beginning. You know, as all these different distillations that we've made from the different farms and the different barley varieties, as they all come of age, you know, this is only the beginning. It's going to become more and more complex as time goes by. So it is. It's sort of the end of the beginning of the end. It's a very interesting, intriguing moment for us. And you'll have felt the atmosphere, the emotion that goes into this. I mean, when we first opened the distillery in May 2001, and I remember before we opened the gates and let people in, Jim and I were wound up, very anxious, and we were pacing backwards and forwards, and we looked each other in the eye, and we couldn't speak. You know, and this was another of those moments, which was just it's hard. Unless you've been this road, and you haven't a hope of understanding that the power and the passion. You know, this isn't just happened like that. You know, 10 years before we even started, this has been on my mind. You know, people think I only met Jim when we first started the distillery. I'd met him on that same trip, that cycling trip. I'd turned up at Beaumont and met this guy who bothered to speak to me it seemed like an hour. And I remember thinking, wow, you know, here's a guy who's more passionate about something than I am. I had no idea that 10 years later, you know, the next time I saw him would be in a solicitor's office signing a contract to come and renovate and bring back Brathlady. So this isn't just 10 years. This is 20 years this has been happening. So that, you know, for Jim and I, there's an awful lot of time involved in this, and the passion and the pride and the emotion, and it's all encapsulated in that. I can't put it any other way.
Tell me about the cycling trip.
So it's when I'd come across Brathlady by chance. I won a prize at the London Wine Fair in 1985. And Jack Milroy, who big personage in the whiskey industry, persuaded me to put a visiting card into a tombola to win a prize. And I won the prize, and he called me up and he said, it's a bottle of whiskey, it's £1,000 a bottle of whiskey. I thought he was nuts, you know. He said, you better come and collect it. So I went to collect it in his shop in Soho, and he said, well, here you go, in his little office above, and here's the bottle, and shook my hand and took a photograph. And he said, well, you know, since you're here, and I thought the whole thing was a bit of a joke, really. And since you're here, you ought to try some whiskies. I got some barrel samples lying around. And being a wine man, you know, I'm a third generation wine merchant, you know, whiskey just didn't register. In 1985, don't forget, you know, single malt whiskey just wasn't happened. It hadn't happened. And I just thought, you know, as a fine wine and spirit merchant, you know, whiskey just wasn't part of it. It was an old man's fuddy-duddy, you know, whiskey soda, whiskey mac. But I could hardly take £1,000 of whiskey off this guy, and you know, out of politeness, I said, "Oh yeah, sure." And I tasted them just as you would with wine. That's the only way I knew. And I was shocked. It was the usual sort of whack of peat, whack of this, whack of that. You know, everything that all my prejudices were, in that. But one of them just blew me away. Because it had all the characteristics of a fine wine that I had been educated by my father around the dinner table for, you know, since childhood to look for, to understand, to appreciate. Balance, equilibrium, harmony, finesse, elegance, not wham bam power, but balance and harmony. And here it was in a distilled spirit. I couldn't rationalize that. And I just remember thinking that it was an epiphany moment. It was like one of those clouds parting and a big finger saying, you know, this could be you, that this was an opportunity. I was at the front of the queue. No one knew about single malt whiskey. No one knew about this. I was there at the front, and I ought to do something about it. And so I did. I remember leaving, and it was a lovely spring day.
And you didn't say this, but that whiskey was a Bruichladdich, right?
Yeah, it was a Bruichladdich. I left, and I tracked down a supply. It was owned by Invergordon at the time. It was very difficult. They hardly knew what they had. And eventually, when I opened my wine company, you know, if you were ever going to, you know, as a wine drinker, if you're ever going to drink a single malt whiskey, this is what you should be drinking. A single malt whiskey for wine drinkers. And that's how I sold it. And it was very successfully. And then about 3 years later, 1989, I thought, crime, I haven't even been to this place. You know, I ought to go and have a look. And I persuaded my brother, it's the only holiday we've ever been on together, I hasten to add, to come with me and explore the west coast of Scotland, a beautiful place. And what we'd do is we'd play, to entice him to come along, we'd play golf on all the island golf courses along the west coast. And some of them are just, you know, grass things, you know, just complete. Some of them were quite fancy. Anyhow, we started at Troon, not an island, but that's where we started. And we did it by bicycle to make it a little bit more interesting. Four clubs each, strapped to the crossbar of the bicycle, and off we went. Took the ferries, Calmac ferries, from island to island, hopped all the way. And got to Isla, and that's when I met Jim. Just called in, the first distiller I'd really seen. And sat there talking to Jim, and then cycled around to the distillery. Bruichladdich, and I was immediately massively disappointed. Beautiful location, plants growing out of it, weeds everywhere, rust, corrosion, shut down, dying. It was really, really not what I expected. I was heartbroken, crestfallen. And it's just not what I was expecting something so different. I was just shocked. And what was worse, so with all those sort of industrial signs on the door that you get with big factories and things, one of them above the gates was just four words, and I've got this sign. It says, "Plant closed, no visitors!" Exclamation mark. And that four words, it just encapsulated everything. Plant, not distillery, but plant. That's how they're seen, you know, in factories, distillo factories. And no visitors! Exclamation mark. And I just thought, this is just not what I expected. I was absolutely, and I saw someone in the courtyard just walking by, and I rattled the gates, and the guy looked over and said, "What do you want?" You know, pretty aggressive. And I said, "Look, you know, I'm, you know, best English accent. I'm, you know, terribly sorry, but I've, you know, one of your biggest customers, and I've come this way by bicycle. And, you know, I was just hoping, you know, you'd let me in just so I can have a look around and take a photograph, you know." And he just said, "No, you can fuck off." Well, all right. So I did. I fucked off. And it just grated with me. I was just so angry and annoyed about it. And that's when I thought, well, I've got to do something about it. And that's when I started writing to the owner and saying, well, you know, if you're not going to run the thing, let me do it. I knew they wouldn't, so I was quite safe in that. But the thing, it just bugged me. And so every January, that period after, you know, the festivities of the new year, and you get back to your office, and, you know, it's hard to get going again. And I thought, oh, no, I'll write to them again. And during that 10-year period, the distillery was sold by Invergordon. You know, well, companies were sold. Invergordon to White & Mackay, and then White & Mackay to Jim Beam, and then Jim Beam to Fortune Brands. And this distillery just got parcelled along with everything else.
And it opened and closed again during that time too, right?
No, I mean, it had been operating on a one-day-a-week basis for a long time. And then finally they shut it down in 94. But each year I wrote and say, well, look, you know, I'm here, you know. And of course they just told me to get lost each time. And then eventually I wrote, in fact, it's the Americans that helped in this, because Fortune Brands, an American company, ended up owning it by having bought the component, Jim Beam, White McCann. And I knew that they would have a less a patriotic view, because the industry is very much a cartel, and you know, if they shut something down, they don't expect it to get up again. They've done it deliberately to consolidate supply and production in you know, fewer, bigger distilleries. But I knew an American board would have a less romantic view about it. It would have a more pragmatic view. And so I wrote to them and said, you know, you've got this thing. It's wasting assets, sitting there, falling to bits on the West Coast. Let me have it. And blow me down, they said yes. And that's when the real excitement started.
What was it like when you finally walked in here after it had been shut down for 6 years and you guys opened the gates and came in and took a look around at what you'd bought?
Well, it was very disappointing. Of course, it is. It's a beautiful location. It's right on the Atlantic shore, and you've got this building there, and it's all sort of crumbling to bits. And the funny thing is the way I'd ask it is actually, what did it mean to the people of this part of the island? And of course, it was like a decaying sort of building that sort of encompassed the whole problems of living in the Hebrides. People were passing it every day. You know, it was like really rubbed in their faces. You know, here was this once great distillery just being allowed to fall to bits and, you know, in rust and ruin. So I knew it'd be an emotional process, but I had no idea how much it meant to the people of the Rins of Islay. I mean, that was just, you know, just totally overwhelming. And of course, you realise, well, you know, we've got to get this thing going, and it's solid Victorian machinery. The good thing is, during this process of 1 day a week operation and then finally closure, you know, the thing was, it was being wound down. It's the usual tactic, you know, mothballing, it's called. You know, it's a nice, you know, it doesn't sound like shut, does it? Nothing had been spent on it for years. Fortunately for us, everything remained original. Instead of it being upgraded and gutted with stainless steel and computers and everything, it was so well laid out by the Harvey brothers, and so efficient, you know, for the time, a state-of-the-art distillery. We were left with everything intact. It hadn't been, you know, the wooden washbacks were still there, 130 years old. Everything was original. And so that's been a huge boon to us, that we can be able to operate it like the Harveys wanted to do. So, you know, okay, we'll get 400 litres per ton of barley. You know, we'll get 400, you know, depending when the barley is, organic or whoever, Islay grown. We can get the yields that you know, all the fancy computerised distilleries get. It just takes us longer to do it. And, of course, anybody who knows anything about, you know, alcohol fermentation, whether it's wine or whatever, you know, the slower you do it, the better it is. So we're very happy to go slow. So it's a huge blessing that it's all the original stuff. Even the still, one of the four stills is the original 1881 still.
How close did you guys come during that first 10 years to not making it at times?
Many times. Many times. Again, this is what people don't understand. The roller coaster that's involved in setting up a distillery that's been shut down outside the industry as outlaws. It was always was. Even when the Harveys had it, they were ostracized by the rest of the industry. It's always had to go it alone. And, you know, we think we've had problems, you know, two world wars, prohibition, stock fraud, all sorts of things that the Harveys had to overcome. Filial sort of fallout, amazing. So our trials and tribulations have been, very small in that respect. it's obviously, you know, we bought some stock. We had to market it, sell it. Our strategy of limited edition bottlings to maximize, you know, the effect of our stocks, the fact we didn't do duty free and those sort of things, and a payroll. Because if you're going to do everything yourself, we're going to bottle it here, we're going to grow the barley here, we're going to run the company from here. You know, that's, you know, it's the only distillery where you see everything happening in one place. You know, everybody operate. You know, we operate from here. 50 people. That's a big payroll. And most of, you know, the other distilleries in Scotland, you know, they're all owned by international companies. Here in Islay, every other distillery is internationally owned or has a major, you know, international overseas ownership. The Japanese, you've got the French, the Americans, the Dutch, you know, the Diageo companies, Lagavulin and Colila are owned by a Dutch company. So it's all, you know, for, you know, corporation
tax.
Of, yeah, exactly. But I mean, you know, this is the only, you know, we pay corporation tax. UK corporate, one of the very few that does. But it's we've stumbled from crisis to crisis. You know, investments we've had to make, you know, that we didn't anticipate, and you know, every you know, we made money for the first time in 2004, which should have been 2003, but you know, we ballsed it up. You know, we you know, getting a bank to support us in the first place was, you know, I went to 25 different banks, so only one of them, you know, would support us, but on a rein that was so tight, it made it very, very difficult for us to grow. You know, now we've got a fantastic bank. You know, we're with the HSBC, and they've given us great sort of facilities and terms. You know, the future, you know, now, you know, everything has come together, and the future for, you know, the whole, the financial side is taken care of. It gives us the headroom to grow the business the way we want to grow it. We're in a very happy place. But no, there were times when it was very tough. The first 3 years, you know, the first thing was we were meant to have bought the distillery in the summer, but because of trying to get a bank, it took us till December. So we missed a whole selling season, you know, so we started on the back foot from day one. And so we had to do a rights issue pretty quickly to compensate for that. And then we had to sort of, you know, develop a distribution system and get the stuff out there into market. And we didn't do as well as we thought we would in the first 2-3 years. So we did another rights issue to plug the hole. And you know, but that's, again, comes back to having, you know, we've talked about this before, about it's all about people, and it's a glib thing to say. People say, oh, it's about people, yeah. But I mean, boy, is this about people. And in this instance, it's the shareholders that I selected to be behind this project. And I didn't want, you know, thousands of sort of, you know, whiskey fanatics, you know, that would, you know, could risk losing everything. I wanted sort of serious investors, sophisticated investors is the technical term. So we set the bar of entry very high at £100,000 per person. And I selected these people who I knew would be interested in what we did. And I knew that it wasn't their last, you know, farthing. You know, I knew that they would be helpful to the business. And I knew, above all, that I could go back to them if we needed more money. And we had to do that 3 times. And not one of them has ever asked for a dividend or their money back or anything. And every profit we've made since 2004 has been reinvested in the infrastructure of the distillery and stock.
Tell me what this place looks like 10 years from now when we celebrate the 20th anniversary.
10 years from now, yeah. What was it going to look like? Well, it will look the same as it does now.
I mean, where does Brooklady stand in the market? Where do you see this company being 10 years from now?
Well, we know the future is secure. We've, you know, all these things that any businessman has to worry about, you know, on a day-to-day basis have, you know, have been taken care of. We have, you know, 4.2 million litres at the moment of whiskey maturing in these warehouses. We have an unparalleled provenance. 28 farms. Most of which are distilled separately apart. We have the most complex stock profile you've ever seen, that's ever existed. And it's a source of inordinate excitement at what we can do with those different components. You see it with the organic, where we've got three separate versions of Brookladdy, organic Brookladdy, put together to create the organic. And you see that's the beginning of what's coming. This uber complexity that no one else will ever be able to dream of. And so, you know, the years to come, 2 years' time, we'll have 10-year-old organic, we'll have 10-year-old Laddy, we'll have 10-year-old Port Charlotte, we'll have 10-year-old Octomore. You know, so if someone asked me about 10-year-old, well, which one will you want? You know, we can give you, you know. I suppose it's the realization that all these things that we've been working on, it's wood, you know, wood for the trees. We've been so close to it. I suppose that's what this day is marking, is the fact that we're actually we're celebrating ourselves and what we've done and what we've achieved and what we've worked with, and actually showing it off to everybody else. And that's what the website's all about, is actually showing people what we've been working on in the last 10 years and bringing it all together. Giving ourselves a pat on the back.
The one thing we didn't talk about, this distillery and the impact on your family. Your son was born the day the stills started running, and we've never mentioned that until now, but your son Rory was born the day you guys fired up the stills for the first time.
No, not at all. No, okay. He was born the day we bought the distillery.
Okay, I got it.
Oh, God, it was a lot worse than that. Half an hour after we bought he was born. He's very much the mascot of the distillery. He's the living embodiment of the progress of what we've been doing. No crumbs. You know, not when we opened the distillery, but when we actually bought it half an hour later. You can imagine, it was a pretty traumatic day. But he was here in my wife's arms as a 6-month-old baby, and filled the first barrel. So barrel number one. Of our whiskey is his. A lot of people try to buy it off him, but he's not selling.
Do you see him running the place eventually?
Oh, good grief. No, Jim's phrase, I think, is very right about this. He likens it very much to a relay runner, and Brookladdy is the baton, and the 4x400-meter relay and... the baton had been dropped on the floor at the changeover, and we've picked up the baton, and we're running with the baton now, and we've overtaken lots of people, and we're, you know, one day we'll hand the baton on to somebody else. You know, Jim's, you know, going to retire in the years to come. I mean, I'm sure he'll still be involved in what we do. Who knows? You can't say.
What do you do when Jim retires? I assume you've already worked this out of what's going to happen.
No, we daren't even talk about it. I don't think you'll ever be able to keep him out of these warehouses, ever. You'd have to padlock them up and give, you know, different code and different key. He's always going to be involved.
But there's no designated successor as far as production manager or somebody to make the whiskey?
Sure. Alan will on a day-to-day basis will do that, yes. But no, I fully expect, you know, Jim to come along and like a great chef, you know, he'll have lots of sous chefs to do things for him, and then he'll come along and sprinkle his gold dust on and take all the credit.
Both Mark and Jim have mentioned the investors who backed their venture. Jeremy Salveson is one of those investors who took the phone call from Mark Rainier and wrote the check.
What these guys do is the way business kind of should work everywhere. They involve the whole community. They're elix to their core. They went to the farmers here. And they said, we want you to grow barley for us. And the farmers, these guys here, they said, you're mad. Nobody's grown barley in Ireland for 40 years. And they said, I don't care. If you grow it, we'll buy it, and we'll pay your premium, because we want Isle of Barley. That's what used to happen before the Second World War in the 100 years ago. And it hasn't happened for years. And they go to the local community and they say, I want you to build me a new shed. I want you to put in a new plant so we can recycle our waste. And they do it all here. And they run a business in a way that businesses used to be run generations ago, where it involved the community. They had a heart and a soul about the place.
It was almost a public trust instead of a money-making venture.
Exactly. So, hey, they're here to make money. They're here to run a commercial enterprise. But they're doing that by involving the whole island, by involving the community. I come to Islay, I get emotional about the place. They have the Brookladdy Pipe Band, and they spring up here, and I have tears running down my face. And I go, no, Jeremy, you're a businessman. You invest in a whole lot of stuff all around the world, in America, in South America, in Australia, in Europe. And I come here, and I cry. And I go, grow up, man, it's ridiculous, what are you doing? But actually, I can't help myself, because they've got something so magical about what they're doing here. They produce the best whiskey in the world for me. I love this stuff. But they do it. It's much more than whiskey. It's much more than money. It's a community thing. And
if I can ask, when Mark came to you 10 plus years ago and wanted you to be an investor, what went through your mind? Did you think they were nuts?
Yeah, for sure they're nuts. But the man had a dream. He had a dream that you could actually believe in, that you could buy into, that you could say, you know what, I want to be part of that journey. And now we are here. We're 10 years old. And we're sitting here surrounded by these barrels. I want to taste that one. I want to see what's in this one over here. Yeah?
Never regretted it for a second?
No, never. I've never had dividends, but hey, we've had some great parties, and we've built an amazing business. We've built an amazing community of people that involves everybody. It's emotional. We're all in it on this journey together, and one day, yeah, for sure, we're not going to get rich, but we're rich in our hearts, we're rich in our community, and we can make a bit of money as well, and it's no better than that.
That's the story. And as Jim put it, it's a fairy tale that you'd be hard-pressed to believe, but every bit of it is true. Now, before I give you my tasting notes for the Laddy 10, let's hear from Martine Nouet, malt maniac, former editor of Whiskey Magazine France, and longtime Islay resident.
First of all, I'm very emotional because that's 10 years already, and I remember when I was there when the baby was born on the first distillation, and we all shared tears at this time. And so tasting that 10-year-old boy, it just makes me really emotional. I think it's fantastic. I love the floral, fruity character of his Brookladdy, and that I find all the character that I've already found in the other Brookladdy, which is this wet sand, this marine, very soft marine touch, and also here with the sherry cask, you get a bit more depth than the other 10 years, and it's a great day for the Laddy, and I enjoy it, and I enjoy being in the middle of that, and really toasting long life to Brookladdy.
That's Whiskey Cast in Depth, and there's just one whiskey in the What I'm Tasting This Week department. The new Laddy 10 is bottled at 46% ABV, mostly from bourbon casks with a small percentage of Oloroso sherry casks. The nose is light and floral with rose petals, a touch of vanilla and honey, and a slightly briny marine note, that wet sand touch that Martine mentioned. The taste is oily, thick, and slightly tart at first with floral touches, some nice spicy hints of allspice and hazelnut, and dried apricots and peaches to round things out. The finish is long, tart, overall very fresh and vibrant. If you've ever tried the old Brookladdy 15-year-old, the first edition, it's very similar to that one. It's an outstanding whiskey. I'm scoring the Laddy 10 a 93. I want to close things out by thanking all of the men and women of Brookladdy for their hospitality this weekend. Mark Rainier contacted me a couple of weeks ago and asked if I could possibly join them this weekend, and his team moved heaven and earth to make it happen. I'm so glad they did. I hope you enjoyed this special episode from Brookladdy on Islay. By the way, watch for a special Whiskey Cast HD episode on the arrival of the Laddy 10 in the coming days, along with a Your Turn Q&A session with Jim McEwen. Whiskey Cast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2011, and comes to you this week from the windy, rainy Isle of Islay in Scotland. There's no place quite like it on Earth. If you've never been here, one visit and you'll fall in love with the island. I'll be back in the charming yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey, next time around, weather permitting, of course. Until then, I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.